Blog Talk Radio.
Michael Clegstead. I'm a junior here at CMU. I'm a philosophy major, and I'm the newest addition to Ethics Talk. I'll be hosting tonight's show on compromise, along with veteran Nicholas Brusseau.
Hey, hey!
I hope to show tonight that a willingness to compromise is a necessity in many aspects of life, whether it be politics, philosophy, life in general, all sorts of things. But before we get into that debate, I think we'd like to start the show off by discussing exactly what we mean by the word compromise, because there are some varying connotations associated with the word. So I've got the Webster's definitions that I can read for you here. The first most common usage of the word compromise is a settlement of differences by mutual concessions. An agreement reached by adjustment or conflicting or opposing claims. Sorry, Nick, go ahead.
I was going to ask, what do you mean by mutual concessions? What do you think that means?
Well, the context that I would use, compromise, I think mutual concessions really means finding a middle ground, seeing eye to eye, perhaps giving up some of the strength of one's position.
So do you want to give like a example of what a middle ground would be if we have two opposing opinions?
Sure, I can just give you a rough hypothetical. Let's say that we're two farmers. And we have a debate about the boundary between our fields, because consequently our fields are right next to each other. Maybe it's some 20 acres that we're disagreeing about. A compromise in that situation would be to find an intermediate boundary that both of us can live with.
So like I'm setting up my boundary, and let's say you spot me doing that, and you're saying, no, your property line is so many acres back this way, and
right.
I disagree. And so you're saying that a compromise must be met in this situation.
I'm not saying that a compromise must be met. I'm saying that the situation should be approached with a willingness to compromise.
Okay, so when is it, I mean, so you show up with this willingness, then when is it appropriate to make the compromise? Because willingness suggests that you may not compromise, but you have the willingness to, but you may not because you disagree with what?
Right, well, there's certainly that possible outcome. I think what I'm really getting at is that holding an absolute, with this definition, holding an absolute opinion or value or position, in this example, that I own all 20 acres, that none of it belongs to you, is sort of a dangerous position to hold if you're not willing to compromise. And that entails talking about it, essentially. It entails, you know, myself saying to you, well, Nick, you know, I think you've got the boundary wrong. Perhaps we can discuss this and figure out where it really lies.
Well, I think discussion is different than compromise. I'd be willing to have a discussion with you about it, and perhaps show you some paperwork proving that my property line is this far, this and this far away. And if you continue to disagree with me, even when I have the rightful ownership of that property, there's no way I'm going to compromise in that situation. So. I mean, like, what would you reply in that situation, that there's an overwhelming amount of evidence that suggests that this property is mine? I mean, where does compromise come in there? I don't see where we can find a middle ground.
Well, without, you know, getting too technical and dragging out this definition, I think I would probably have to agree with you that it is possible, you know, if I can't present a rational argument. For example, if I said to you, well, you know, this badger walked up to me and told me that the boundary lies here and that this is my land.
Right.
You'd probably laugh at me like you are now. And in that circumstance, I would say it's probably not likely that we'll reach a compromise, but I still hope to show that it's important we approach the situation with a willingness to compromise, if that makes sense. And
okay.
I think this second...
So, I mean, when then is it the appropriate place to have a compromise? So you suggested the situation where it's somebody's acting completely irrational, but what if it's the case that, I mean, the person's not saying that a badger told them, but they're saying, you know, hey, the guy that sold me this, you know, told me that this was a part of my property line. And then you, and then the other person shows, well, here's the documented evidence that it is mine. I mean, is compromise still necessary in that point?
We've got an interesting point here, Nick, and I think that I'm going to read the second common definition given by Webster's, the semantical meaning of the word in everyday conversation, and I think that'll shed some light on the point you're leading to here. The second most commonly given definition for compromise is an endangering, especially of reputation, or more as you were saying, a compromise of one's integrity. So there's sort of this negative connotation associated with compromise that, you know, in that circumstance where we're having this debate over the boundary of land, it might be that I can't present a position that is at all rational. It might be totally irrational. And for you to compromise in that situation could be an endangering of your position. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, I think it would be, I think it would just be wrong of me to concede to somebody because they're irrational. I don't know if it's necessarily a compromise of my integrity as much as it's like a compromise based on...
A compromise of your interests.
Yeah, a compromise of interests, yeah.
Right. Well, let's go through a few examples here, a few hypotheticals, because I'm not sure that there is always a compromise to be had, you know, other than simply getting frustrated and walking away, which
right.
I think it's fair to say would probably not be a compromise of the sort we're discussing. But I think that given different contexts, there might be more to shed light on here. For example, let's take a political context. We'll talk about Congress, a representative democracy. Ultimately, when an issue or a law faces Congress, a decision has to be made. I mean, of course, you can filibuster and refuse to converse about a particular issue, but that in itself is a hindrance to progress. You know,
I would disagree here just on the point that it may be the case that no action is best, and no action is the progressive choice.
Perhaps no action is best, but a position has to be taken. I mean,
even if that position is no action, it's still, I mean, even no action would be a position, right?
Well, I think I would disagree, because if we were to universalize that, and make it a universal position that Congress didn't have to arrive at any given law or any given decision, nothing would get done. It would be a hindrance to progress. So I think that not taking a position in this circumstance is the opposite of good.
Okay, well, we have a caller here, so we're going to take that.
Fantastic.
Hello, caller.
Hi. Hey, guys. I can only hear you on the phone, and I don't know what's going on, but in the chat room, like, we can't hear you online.
Oh, no.
So I don't know what's happening, whether it's a problem with Blog Talk Radio or what, but I could hear you fine on the phone, but for some reason there's nothing coming over online. So I just want you to
know
that.
It says to me on live now, 49 minutes remaining.
I know, it says
that we're on the host switchboard.
Okay,
I don't know, should I hang up and call back in, or?
I don't know. It's up to you guys, but we can't hear anything. I just asked people in the chat room. They can't hear anything. But it's totally up to you. I mean, maybe it's just a problem with Blog Talk Radio, and I would just keep talking.
All right. Well, maybe we should try calling back in.
Don't
call back in. Just keep talking?
Yep. Okay.
All right. Well.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye. Apparently we've got some technical difficulties going on here, but I guess we just kind of got to roll with the punches on that one. Hey, Nick?
Oh, that's right.
So we were discussing...
compromise during...
politics,
decisions.
The virtue of compromise, or the willingness to compromise in politics.
Right.
I think if we universalized that premise, you know, if we took a categorical imperative Kant approach, and we always accepted that no solution is necessary, we can agree not to do anything, nothing would ever get done in Congress. I mean, our government would serve absolutely no purpose.
So you're saying that there's always going to, like, you're saying that consensus is kind of like having everybody agree on one point is never going to happen. So compromise is always going to be necessary in the political realm because people aren't always going to agree. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know if I'm arguing a point quite that strong, but yes, something like that.
Okay, I mean, like, I can understand that. I mean, especially in a, you know, you watch C-SPAN, it's not like you find any decision being made that's not refuted by somebody or disagreed with by somebody or some dissenting opinion. But nevertheless, I think that, you know, decisions do need to be made, even if one person disagrees. And so, I guess, is there a point where, you know, if there's this unwillingness to compromise in that, well, I mean, like, what is the consequence of having an unwillingness to compromise? Because what that says to me is that the unwillingness to compromise allows for there to be a majority, you know, somewhere, and there to be a minority that's disagreeing, and that, and both parties, the majority and the minority, seem to have this trait of unwillingness to compromise, and it's just a matter of the collective that bring them together to make the decision, not their willingness to compromise.
Well, I see the point you're getting at there, and I'm going to have to go ahead and disagree with that, because I understand you're talking about the rule by masses or the majority rule that applies in the context of Congress, right? And you're saying that that is what makes them decide and not compromise.
Right.
So perhaps this example won't get us through the problem you pointed out earlier. But I think what I'd like to point to is the danger, really, in not compromising. You know, if you are unwilling to even hear an opposing view on any matter, what you're really doing is stating a position of infallibility. That is to say...
Oh, I agree. I just don't think that's compromise when you're unwilling to listen to somebody. Unwillingness to listen is different than the willingness to compromise. You know what I mean? So let me say that again. The willingness to compromise doesn't necessitate the unwillingness to compromise doesn't mean that you're not willing to listen and engage that opinion.
Well, ultimately here, maybe we're having a debate about words. Maybe we really mean the same thing, and we're just having trouble with this term in between called compromise.
That could be the case.
But I think that if you don't at least approach with a willingness to compromise, perhaps there is no solution to the circumstance. Perhaps there is no intermediate ground, or we just can't reach it in a reasonable amount of time. But I think that it's approaching the situation with the acceptance that I may not be totally right. There's a possibility that I might not have conceived something. I might have made some miscalculation of thought. And that, more importantly, we need to move forward, you know, and especially in something like politics. So maybe you could be right that role of the masses plays a big role there, but I think in all sorts of aspects of life, simply talking about a disagreement all day is not a solution.
Yeah, well, I think we're now shifting towards, because you said, like, kind of it, like, it has this personal value to go into a situation, the willingness to compromise. And I think when you bring it down to that personal level, it becomes, you're talking about compromise being necessary for the pursuit of truth or the pursuit for a better understanding of something.
I think I would even go farther than that. I mean, I'm talking about compromise as a mode of progress. You know, yes, discussion in search of truth, listening to an opposing opinion and rational criticism is important, but, I mean, there really aren't many circumstances in which we can simply agree to disagree. Like, let's take another example. Let's take the abortion debate. Let's say that I am pro-life and you are pro-choice. And I'm unwilling to reach any middle ground. And you point out to me, let's talk this out here. Let's say that I think in any given circumstance, abortion is never okay. And you think that ultimately the woman's right to choose is what's important. So let's say that I pointed out to you, well, sure, the woman's ability to choose is important, but what about murder? And you say, well, what do you mean? And I say to you, well, Nick, what you're doing in abortion is killing an infant. You know, you're killing a person. Now, at this point, I've faced you with an inconsistency. Either you don't believe that abortion is murder, or you don't believe that murder is wrong, or there's an inconsistency in your belief systems. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it makes sense, but then it comes down to the definition of murder.
Oh, right, and then we get into a greater debate. But my point is that there's something there that needs to be reconciled. And, you know, I don't want to debate whether or not murder is wrong or whether abortion is murder, but if I face you with that, something needs to be reconciled within your own head. Otherwise, you're supporting inconsistent beliefs.
Well, I think that would, I mean, again, it comes down to, I agree with what, like, on principle of what you're saying. But I think that the truth of these kind of opinions depend on the circumstance, and this is what John Stuart Mill says, is that opinion in every circumstance to determine its verdict needs to be put into a specific circumstance. So if you were to ask me if abortion is right in the third trimester, I'd probably say no. I would say no. And then if you ask me if abortion is right, is a just situation after, you know, the extreme situation where a father raped his daughter and got his daughter pregnant, is it appropriate then? Like, I think so. You know, and so I think the truth depends on the circumstantial situation that you bring it into. And I don't know if that appeals to what kind of you were talking about or what.
Well, you're saying that context matters, right?
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm saying.
And I won't disagree with that point, you know, that a solution or a lack of a solution depends on context. But let me kind of change gears on you and add a layer of complexity. You know, the situation becomes real if one of us is about to have an abortion. You know, then this debate isn't purely hypothetical. It's about an actual life.
Right.
And, you know, basically this is to hedge you off on your argument about politics being the rule of the masses. I'm just going to take an alternate route to the same problem. Presumably this baby is going to be born in so many months. You know, we can't have this discussion forever. You can choose to be unwilling to discuss it or compromise and just not listen to me and get an abortion. But ultimately, you know, I think we agree that that is supporting a position of infallibility. You know, you believe at that point that you can't possibly be wrong, that there's nothing I can say that would make you change your mind. And if that's the case, you know, if that is a position that a person holds, I obviously can't talk them out of it, but I think everyone can see how that could be problematic. So, you know, we're faced with this discussion. I'm saying to you, you know, abortion is wrong. Pro-life. You're saying, well, I have the right to choose. It's my body. What happens if you abort the baby? My conscience is going to be offended. It doesn't mean anything at a political level, but, you know, I could be morally hurt from that decision of yours. Does that matter at all, or, I mean?
I think it depends. I think it's a really tricky issue to be discussing abortion in this context.
Oh, absolutely.
To compromise, I mean, for me, it's, you know, again, when truth comes back to a circumstantial basis, and you mentioned it's coming from my perspective, I think personal experience changes one's opinion. So if you were in the situation that I was in, and would you have an abortion, you know, it's hard for you to say because you're not in that situation, and you're not from the same upbringing or whatever that I've had. And just my character in general. So I think there's another level of complexity where I guess the answer becomes relative to the person's experiences. Not saying that the truth is, but the answer for that person becomes relative. Because I don't think you can weigh a person's personal experiences to some higher truth. I don't know.
So ultimately, I think what you're talking about here is where your stance on abortion comes from, right? You're talking about the subjective nature of experience. You're talking about, you know, the upbringing that you have, the morals that you hold, the type of schooling you've been through.
Right.
What I'm talking about is not necessarily the goodness or badness of where those come from, or, you know, the relativity of where beliefs come from, but simply the danger in only holding these absolute beliefs. You know, regardless of what my position is, regardless of what your position is, I'm saying that being totally unwilling to compromise, to simply think that, you know, abortion is always pro-choice, that there is no other correct answer, is ultimately a poor decision.
I think I would like it to bring it outside of this abortion thing. I think it's
too technical, getting hung up on the details.
Yeah, I guess so, because it's like now I feel like I'm compelled to argue, like, the truth. I mean, I understand what you're getting at. I think the meta point that you're trying to point to is that absolutes are bad. If you look at abortion and from an absolute standard, whether it's you're pro-life or pro-choice, either way, holding an absolute is a bad thing. Now, why is it a bad thing? Like, can you flesh that out in a couple sentences? Or
I think, and maybe not everyone agrees with this, but I think the most succinct way to explain the problem with only holding an absolute is that you're subject to ignorance, I guess, really, is the way Socrates would say it. You're subject to holding a value that has no basis in, you know, rational thought, has no basis in logic, has no basis in fact or truth, because you're unwilling to question it. I think we probably agree on that point.
Well, can you hold something absolutely and still question it?
I think yes. I don't think that having a discussion or a discourse or being willing to compromise means the second definition. I don't think it means endangering your integrity. You're simply keeping an open mind.
Okay. I mean, I totally agree with that. If you want to and you know, you said there may be just like a semantic difference or a difference in the way we're using words. And when you say coming in with an open mind, I feel much more comfortable accepting that. I think John Stuart Mill talks about this, and he says one of the most common cases of conflicting doctrines or conflicting beliefs is that instead of one being true and the other being false, there's a shared truth between them. And so I think oftentimes when we go into a situation thinking that our position's right, absolutely, then we think whenever something opposes us, it's a contradiction with that absolute, and therefore it's automatically wrong. And so you're unwilling to engage that other side because you think it's because you hold you hold that so absolutely. And so there's the danger of gaining some higher truth. There's an example of that I had in a philosophy course where a student was a fellow peer of mine was describing the that humans don't have instincts, and that was kind of how he presented his argument. And immediately people were jumping on him and throwing counterexamples of kind of what instinct was and blah blah blah. And I really didn't think we were being charitable, and either was I at the time, being charitable with what he was trying to say. But if we had realized that it wasn't that he was necessarily saying that instincts were not human, but he was saying that we have the most will in the animal kingdom, and so our instincts are suppressed often. And, you know, I can agree with that, you know, and so there was some level of truth that I was unwilling to see because I was automatically... And I think the group around me, too, was automatically taken aback by his presentation of that opinion. But we have a call, so we're going to take that. Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
No, just fine, sir, just fine. I'm just calling to you in your radio show. Your conversation seems a lot more interesting, you know, because... And it says that the necessary of compromise, and I think... That, to me, compromise is how pretty much most things get done. I mean, if you hold absolute beliefs, which, by the way, I see in the chat room is Jeff Worth says the irony of the phrase of holding an absolute belief is bad. And I do see the irony of that. But And I mean, holding absolute beliefs, which I think most of you agree, is a detriment not only to yourself and trying to expand your mind and everything else, but I think it's a detriment against a society. And if you have absolute beliefs, if you held this belief, and if not only if you can't have it, the belief to not bend or like break or anything else, or like allow new ideas to flourish, your society will wither and die. Or you will just be forgotten and just not be listened to or anything else.
You're raising an excellent point here that I think Nick and I have failed to address so far. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what you're saying is that holding an absolute, being unwilling to listen to opposite sides of debate, is not just a danger to us in ignorance, but ultimately it's negative to the entire society.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I think
that's a fantastic point.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's an interesting point, too, rather compelling.
Perhaps it's a point I should have thought about when we were having this debate about politics.
I'm still not sold. I guess maybe my intuition is just keeping me back, and maybe I'm holding the absolute here. I guess I'm just saying compromise is not always necessary. Now, I do think that there are situations where compromise is important, you know, that decisions are not going to be made always by consensus. And so compromise becomes necessary to get through a decision. However, I think, you know, there's certain positions I'm not willing to compromise on.
And that's a fair point, Nick, and I think we'll address that again in the show. But a point that our caller brought up was that compromise gets things done. You're still on the line with us?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I hate to put you on the spot, but can you give us any examples of how compromise gets things done?
You can look at this country, how it started. I mean, it wasn't absolute beliefs. It was a lot of argument and compromises to a lot of people's debates and how this country can survive and such. I mean, that's what it needed, compromise and everything.
Now,
there was a lot of compromise.
You're absolutely right. It's another fantastic point. But a question that I'm sure Nick is wondering, and I'm wondering as well, do you think that there's a line that needs to be drawn? I mean, at what point does compromising or being open to suggestion, is that detrimental at some point?
Yes, it is. It is detrimental in some points, and a lot of points, because if you have, for example, you know, something what happened in, like there are some beliefs that I cannot compromise in my
right.
personal opinion. I cannot compromise freedom of speech. You know, I can't compromise, certain other things in my life. I can't compromise those things. There are some things you just can't compromise. I mean, there are some things you can and some things you can't. It just varies from different person to person. I mean, you know. That sort of thing. It's just there are some beliefs that some people can compromise, and sometimes it can think things can get done. But there are sometimes that compromise can hurt you, and sometimes hurt society in the whole. You know, sometimes what your decision can not only hurt yourself, but actually hurt those around you. So that sometimes you don't compromise in every situation. There's some things you have to stand and fight for.
And I like how you used the example of free speech, and I think what that suggests as an extension of what you're saying is that that even the person that is trying to undermine free speech or even abolish free speech, it's still necessary perhaps to hear their opinion. I mean, to at least put it up to the table to be discussed. I mean, I think that's the beauty of free speech is that even free speech says, yeah, let's hear it against me. You know, let's hear what free speech isn't or why we shouldn't have free speech.
Interrupted. I'm just looking in the chat room. It's just something, a question has been asking. Is there a distinct line where compromise is not a possibility, such as truth? That's a very interesting question because sometimes in life, there's compromise. You can't compromise. There's no real choice. There are some places that you can't compromise. You have to hold firm on your possession? Just want to ask that question out there and stuff. Because I'm looking at chat room, because this is a very interesting question.
I think it's an interesting question as well, and it comes down to, what is truth, and what can we determine as truth? And what I think is really interesting that this point brings up is something that I think philosophy addresses. I think philosophy is concerned with things that cannot be known for certain. For example, 2 + 2 = 4 will always be the case, and us looking at how the stars move, there's a certain pattern that we ascribe to them, and we figure it out mathematically, we understand gravity, certain things become empirically proved. And so there's that kind of truth, and then there's the kind of moral truth that I think we're more approached with in every decision in politics, and other things of that nature as too. So when you're dealing with morality, and we understand that morality, truth is really dependent on the circumstance and perhaps a lot of other things, and I don't claim to know what these are, but I think we'll have a better understanding by through the medium of free speech. So I don't know if I answered the question there.
Well, it's kind of unfortunate. It is another fantastic question. Nick and I sort of had this conversation, I think, when we were still having technical difficulties. Unfortunately, it seems that we're faced with it again. But I think what Nick is talking about with known truths versus possible truths, that's Bertrand Russell, am I right?
Yeah.
We're talking about the nature of philosophy here. Mm-hmm. And really, while there are certain truths that most of us aren't comfortable questioning, like math, like gravity was another example you gave, which is actually kind of ironic.
Right.
Gravity's been disproven with relativity.
Right.
But ultimately, what we're getting at here is that while there may be certain types of truths that have sort of grown into their own, much of what we are talking about is still very much up for debate. I think the common theme here seems to be that discussion is the essential thing. That it's in talking about these issues, such as compromise, the virtue of holding absolutes or the non-virtue of holding absolutes, that we approach a closer truth.
Yeah. And not only that, it may be the case that we get to a position that we're well entrenched in. And in order for that truth to stay alive, it needs to be put up for discussion so people won't be accepting the truth blindly and forget why that truth was in place in the first place. So it keeps us out of dogmatic behavior. And so when new circumstances arise, we're still discussing it and we're still trying to figure out, is this the correct action?
Yes. For just as an example, is like morality, our culture and stuff like that. There are some cultures, like, for example, that where, you heard about the whole Michael Vick, dog fighting.
Yeah, the dog fighting.
Yes. But in his culture where he grew up, dog fighting wasn't seen as such a horrible thing. In fact, it was encouraged. It was like an encouragement from the police officers, what he said in that 60 Minutes interview. And maybe in his heart that he doesn't see dog fighting as a horrible thing and stuff like that. And there are some people in the cultures that have that sort of thing, or eat dogs or anything else. They're not saying they're bad people, but they have different chances of morality or choice or things like that. You cannot judge someone's morality or someone's right, what culture they're on. I mean, is the entire culture evil or the entire person evil because they do this thing? No. I'm just saying that, I'm just saying that this might be his truth and things like that. He can't just throw away his, 28, 29 years of, existence. This is bad now. If it was okay, it was okay. Okay, now it's bad. You understand what I'm saying, right? Is this something in this?
Yeah, I think you're bringing up a position that that is kind of, I think, it's an interesting position because I often find myself discussing the same thing as moral relativism, meaning that the truth of morality is based on the individual. And so,
based on the individual in the sense, usually as applied to culture. The culture
right.
The individual comes from determines truth
right.
For them.
Right. Right. So, like Hitler's youth, for example, all of a sudden you can start to justify the morals behind Hitler's youth because they were raised in that circumstance. And I have a hard time swallowing that, and I think a lot of people do, that they think that there's this higher level of value. For John Stuart Mill, he brings up the harm principle, which is actually fairly complex. Actually, it's really complicated, but it's basically the sense that you have liberty to do whatever you want so long as you don't harm anybody else. But that term becomes really, really tough. Caller, we have another caller calling in, so I appreciate the insight, and I don't know. Maybe
great questions and points. Thank you very much for your call.
Do you want me to hang up right now, or you want me to stay on?
I guess you can decide, but we're going to see what this caller has to say. And
I'll stay on.
Okay,
like
fantastic. Thank you. Hello, caller.
Hello. Hello. Is this me, caller? Because I don't know how many callers
we have. Yeah, we have another caller in here, too.
Hello.
Okay. Hi. Great questions. And I just wanted to actually sort of broaden the discussion a bit. You guys have been talking about John Stuart Mill, and unfortunately, because of the technical difficulties, I didn't really catch what you were saying before about political compromise. But I just want to broaden the discussion to talk about not just truths, but values, because when we're talking about circumstances, like you guys were making the point that, okay, well, I think when you're talking about abortion, it depends on the circumstance, and Nikki said something like, well, if I have a daughter and she's raped, then in that case I'm going to think that abortion is okay. And what's really going on behind that is that we have to move from the realm of propositions to the realm of values. And I think one of the problems is that when we're talking about compromise and morality and politics, even the First Amendment, right? The First Amendment is there to serve a value, and the value is, at the very least, autonomy. There's disagreements about how broad that value is. But the point that I want to make is two points. One is that it helps if we start to talk about values and whether or not, I mean, going back to the Michael Vick discussion, so in that culture, the welfare of animals is just not valued. And one question is that good or bad for, the beings in the universe? But the other point I wanted to make is going back to absolutes and compromise, even if we're just talking about an individual, like you guys were talking about discussions, political debates, and what I'm about to say actually draws from a book. It's called Defining Moments. It's an excellent book. But basically the point that is made in this book is that when we're talking about so-called moral dilemmas, what's really going on is that a person has to choose from amongst a hierarchy of values which value is the one that trumps. And in this book, the point is made that when we're talking about moral issues, we're talking about right versus right decisions, not right versus wrong. So to say, do the right thing, very simplistic. The hard question is when we're faced with a choice where there's two quote-unquote values at stake, right? Perhaps the welfare of the daughter who's been raped versus perhaps, if the fetus is a human being, that life, right? And we have to choose which value trumps. And so it's not just a matter of truth at the propositional sense. And by proposition, I just mean sentence. But these sentences exist to serve values. And the complicated thing is that in human life, there's many values. There's like empathy, there's honesty, there's family, and these things conflict with each other. And to be a moral agent is to choose which one trumps, and only the individual can decide. And here's what we mean by, like, integrity, which is the most important thing. So I don't know if I'm making sense, but...
You absolutely are making sense.
That was
but a
great point. Very good question. That is something new, something really have to ponder. And I'm sorry for interrupting you, sir, but...
it's fine. Go ahead.
Just that, you have to look at what happens that this child was, that was conceived and does and everything else was not brought by the woman's choice. She did not want this to happen. She did not want, you know, she might want, like, children someday, but not like in the circumstances she had.
Right.
She might not want these circumstances.
Right.
On the other hand, the child in this is innocent. The child here is innocent of doing something, you know, he had, like, the child had nothing to do with pretty much what's happened and everything else.
Right, and I don't want to get hung up on abortion because we could just be here for, like, three shows.
Right,
but,
right,
of course, like, in the rape example, I think Nick would probably say that, you know, the woman is innocent because she was raped. But in any case, my point is not about abortion. I'm trying to draw a broader point, but just connecting to the points that were earlier made. But that ultimately what we're dealing with is a hierarchy of values. And in the decision of Roe versus Wade, the Supreme Court of the United States decided to say what trumps is the woman's right to make this decision for herself. And they made that decision. And, of course, there are people who disagree with that value trumping. So I just want to bring the conversation to the discussion about values. And I think this goes back to the discussion in the chat room about there are certain things that, you know, are non-negotiable for some people. There are certain values that are at the top of the food chain, if you will, and if anything is conflicting with them, then that's just not going to happen for that person, and they will fight to preserve that value. With that, I don't want to take up any more time, so I'm going to hang up. And great show, guys.
Great question, by the way.
Thanks. Likewise. Mm. Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah.
So I think what the caller just brought up is, and she also had mentioned that value is kind of, you know, the individual starts to determine what these values are. But, I mean, do you have anything to say about that? I think it's a really interesting,
it is an incredibly interesting proposition that, you know, values are things to be determined only by the individual. And I think that in this particular circumstance, where here I am arguing for the willingness to compromise, and I guess the willingness to question absolutes, I'd have to say that it's probably against the position I'm taking. I guess the position I'm taking is that, well, something like a value may be left for the individual to decide. It's the discussion. It's the debate, like what we're doing right now. It's the conversation about that value that ultimately should play the essential role.
Right.
Does that make sense? I mean, yes, you have to be happy with the value you choose. You're the one who has to go to sleep at night. But I think Mill would agree with me on this point. In fact, I think I've even got a quote from Mill written down here. Here it is. Yep. The fullest liberty of professing and discussing any doctrine, however immoral it may be considered. So what Mill is saying in that quote is, you know, no matter how strongly you feel about something, no matter how deep set a no matter how deep set a value is, the fullest liberty is discussing it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, would you say that that's a fair position that Mill takes?
Yeah, I think so. I think the discussion is important. And also, the nature of that discussion is highly important to how the values are depicted. You know, so you have a presenter of a value, you know, who's arguing for a value, and it may be the case that they present it with such anger in their voice, or you know, it's presented badly, and so that opinion or that value gets associated with that presenter. So, like, they're, as John Stuart Mill calls it, their mode of advocacy or the way that they present it gets that vice or that virtue. So it may be the case that somebody expresses an opinion you disagree with really badly. For example, Hitler was a great orator and convinced a lot of people of some things, but it may be the case that, you know, if they would have extracted the opinion out from the way it was presented and looked at it from a value standpoint, it would have been a tremendously different situation.
So you're saying judge the point being made, judge the opinion or the value independently of the person who's saying it and the way they're saying it.
Correct.
You know, again, we're raising all sorts of interesting questions and unfortunately, more questions than answers, but it's beginning to look like maybe we should have called this the necessity of discussion rather than the necessity of compromise.
Yeah, that's how stuff gets started. You know, it starts off one thing. That's how life is. You start off one path, then it branches out to something else and different. You may not like the way you're going, but it's been one interesting ride to get there, you know?
Absolutely. Another response that our caller brought up earlier was that, you know, values were something that had to be decided for an individual. You had to choose trumping values. And I think that this may have been a conversation that didn't make it onto the air yet, but we were discussing politics and the virtue of compromise or the willingness to compromise in politics. And I think we'll try and rehash that quickly, see if we can remake some of those points. I've got a quote here from Ronald Reagan in his autobiography. And he says, "When I began entering into the give and take of legislative bargaining in Sacramento, a lot of the most radical conservatives who had supported me during the election didn't like it. Compromise was a dirty word to them, and they wouldn't face the fact that we couldn't get all of what we wanted today. They wanted all or nothing, and they wanted it all at once. If you don't get it all, some said, don't take anything." So really, I think the point that Ronald Reagan is making there is that, you know, we could debate the truth or falsehood of this all day, whether or not Ronald Reagan's presidency or, you know, other involvements in Congress actually represented this point. I think the point he's making is that, you know, even though I support this conservative platform, even though there are these people that elected me, ultimately, you know, I have to serve my constituents by making it happen.
Right.
And I think that's a point that our current caller had been trying to make earlier, was that, you know, even though this may not be in accordance with this hypothetical platform or this greater system of beliefs that it is to be a conservative, ultimately I'm giving up some of that to, you know, pass laws, to get the vote through, to meet eye to eye with liberals or Democrats or independents to make it happen.
Exactly. That's how things get done, like you said earlier. It's like the best thing to get things to get done is how, so that's how society goes. And that's, like I said, this is the formation of this country. There were people against slavery. There were people for slavery. There were people who were pro the British Empire, pro everything else. There were so many different radical opinions, but they all came together. They came together with one central cause. They compromised in their beliefs and such, and they came open-minded enough to form this union, this country. And you know, that's how it is. Compromise is actually benefits, you know, sometimes, not all the times, but really like 40, 50, 60% of the time helps society. It helps bring about the things and changes and such. And when I see people who just sit there, you know, with their dogmatic view saying, if you don't agree with this, it's my way or the highway, I'm like, you're not going to get anywhere. You're not going to do anything. You're not going to, you know, you take this hard stance and that's it. I understand that sometimes you can't take, that you can't have, you have to have hard stances on, but sometimes you have to have a little tact with it. You don't have to, a little compromise it, because if you don't compromise, you're not going to get anything done. You're not going to move anything forward.
The reason why I disagree with that is because I think, to a large extent, from what I see when I watch C-SPAN, which actually I'm a kind of nerd and I do enjoy watching it. I don't know why, because it just makes me upset. But that the way people engage in discussion, or what should be called dialogue, or what maybe is called the moderator, I don't know, there's the president of the speaker, and they kind of go through this process, but it's everybody's taking these hard stance opinions, and when somebody poses a question to somebody on a stance, they don't sit there and answer it. They avoid the question, and they move on to something else that's going to make their position stronger. And so I don't see that as compromise. I don't see that at all as compromise, and what I see happening is the majority rule. And this is, I mean, you can look at this administration of the previous, I mean, again, this is, you know, I'm not swaying for one political party or the other, because I've noticed that, you know, now the House and the Senate is controlled by Democrats, and Bush's term is both were controlled by Republicans, and to a large extent there wasn't any intermingling of honest debate, of honest discussion. And so the morality of public discussion, I have to say, is lost in the most important place it should be, which is in the legislature. And that's what I'm talking about. Like, I think you're mentioning compromise as an importance of progression. I'm saying the most important thing is the public discussion and how that is done, how that is gone through.
You know, Nick, I absolutely agree with you. I think this is coming down to the semantical difference in meaning about compromise.
Right.
Because
I was going to say that. Go ahead.
When you say that they're really just yelling at each other and not listening to each other's points, I wouldn't say that that represents compromise. You know, congressional vote trading, you know, you vote for my conservative law and later I'll vote for your liberal law, I wouldn't say that that's compromise at all. In fact, Axelrod, who is kind of the political scientist who, I guess, I'm purporting to support this necessity of the willing to compromise, he actually talks about, he calls it mutual exploitation. We're not compromising. What we're doing is letting each other exploit.
Right.
I'm exploiting you, you're exploiting me. There's no conversation. And I think conversation is really a prerequisite to compromise. You know, in any definition of the word, in any view or context of the word, ultimately here, discourse is necessary. If we can't see each other's views, how are we supposed to find a middle ground? So I think that we agree on more than
we
disagree.
I think that actually now I'm starting not to so see much as a semantic difference as much as a process. So first off, which I don't think we got enough into, is first off you need what John Stuart Mill calls the morality of public discussion and what he puts forward for that. That is the prerequisite to compromise. Only after moral public discussion can compromise be had. Advantageous compromise, to the point where, you know, we live in a representative democracy. We have a senator that represents us, you know, and is out there making his plea for his constituents. And so in doing that, I think that, you know, they should really try to stand as hard as they can on that position, you know, while replying to the refutations that are brought to it. And then eventually to say, well, we have to make a decision now. You have this view representing this people. I have this view representing my people. You know, now what do we do? Can we synthesize this in any way to create the most advantageous decision for each person? And so in that context, I can agree. But in the context of which I see the large amount of the legislative body now, I don't see that going on, and I see compromises. I forget the way you described it. We're actually mutual exploitation as
congressional
compromise.
Vote trading.
Congressional
you
vote
don't
trading.
Think that that's compromise. Well, I hate to exhaust our last few minutes, you know, dragging out this point, but I think you sort of hinted at it when you were speaking to the fact that the voters' interests don't get represented in congressional vote trading, that we're not talking about our constituents' views anymore. We're talking about an absolute.
Right.
Is that sort of in the realm of what you were saying?
I mean, I guess you could say, I don't know if that's the case, because if you were to take, you were to take my liberal bill and I was going to take your conservative bill and we each vote on it and they each get passed, well, maybe the case that your bill represented your people and my bill represented my people, but we didn't even look at the in-between ground on these two bills. You know what I mean? And so there was no honest dialogue about it. And therefore, it ultimately comes down to the people weren't represented because the representative was ignoring the possibilities of the best result because he was unwilling to engage the other opinion.
So while they were coming to a conclusion, they were absolutely and entirely failing to approach the situation with an open mind.
Right.
I mean, and an interesting question raised by all this is, can a voter's interests even be represented by a two-party system? I mean, can we truly say that there's anyone among us who totally feels conservative on every issue or totally feels liberal on every issue?
No, I don't think so. But I do think that there's a level at which honest debate can go down, and then that I think that will ultimately bring out the best decision for its people. You're shaking your head. What do you?
No, I absolutely agree.
Okay.
I absolutely agree. I don't think there's any better way to say it.
I also want to make this point. Dr. May has brought it up to me as C-SPAN kind of has this, it's a curse and a good thing at the same time. But like what I notice C-SPAN, what it does is it puts people on the TV screen. So all of a sudden now the people can watch their representative in action. And they want to see that the person they voted in is kind of, you know, making these, making a strong case for their thing and what ends up happening for their, I don't know, issue. And so what I think ends up happening is a lot of times it's not honest debate that goes down because the person just wants to show their strength or their hard-headedness on a particular issue. And I think it's totally counterproductive to what the to what legislation should really be about, which is you know, trying to find what the best answer is and what the best decision is based on all parties involved.
Well, again, totally interesting points that we could be talking about an hour for any one of these points. I've got to apologize, though, perhaps another point to consider. I don't think I was totally charitable to the point that Dr. May made on the phone just now. She was talking about the hierarchy of values and how ultimately we have to choose one value or the other,
mm-hmm.
and it's a right decision. I think another way to look at what she was saying was perhaps compromise is one of these values. Perhaps finding an answer is in this hierarchy somewhere. You know, do you place the abortion debate, you know, do you place the value of human life above having a law in the books? You know, would
right.
it be more beneficial to have a law in the books that says, you know, third trimester abortion or partial birth abortion is bad rather than just, you know, getting into a fist fight over our disagreement?
Right.
I don't know, but it's something to be considered.
Yeah,
yeah.
Very interesting discussion. And, thanks again for letting me join into this you know, conversation, because I really learned something and everything, and you got a new listener out of it, by the way.
Absolutely.
Oh,
thanks for your call. It was fantastic.
All right, I have to go. Thank you. You have 2 minutes remaining, by the way, and such, and I don't want to, you know, hold y'all out any longer. So have a great 2 minutes, and I'll see y'all next time, all right?
Thank you. Have a good one. Take care.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. So ultimately, Nick, do you think we can sum up really what we've been talking about here in 60 seconds? I mean, I know that it was truncated.
I think the great, like, for me, what was awesome about what I think we did is we started off with this disagreement about, I think we fundamentally came into the discussion in this, is that we disagree that there is this necessary for compromise. And then gradually I started to kind of move towards your side. But then I realized what really is happening is we're combining our truths, because I was all for the morality of public discussion, and what I think I came up with, at least for right now, opinions are apt to change, is that it starts off with the morality of public discussion, and then it moves into where can we compromise. That's the way to the best solution. And so for me, that was the most beneficial of this show.
And, you know, whether or not we disagree about the definition of compromise, about, you know, what that means for your absolutes or moral values, I think what we're really saying is, before you can even think about, you know, compromising or not compromise, all of this necessitates a discussion. You know, if we don't have a discourse on any of these topics, you know, not only can we not compromise, we can't even understand that we disagree.
Yeah. And look at the goodness that came from our, I think, what was a moral public discussion. So I think even though we are in disagreement, we still had a moral public discussion and maybe came to a compromise. I don't know. a lot went down. So please join in next week. We will be doing a show with the SGA president here at CM, and it should be an interesting discussion. Also, the person from MyEDU, which is a grading site, will be on that show as well. That's it. Have a good one.